not feeling right. All I wish is to be alone. Stay away, don't you invade my home. Messed up if you hang outside. Don't come in, I'll only run and hide. Who can it be now? 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 Who can it be knocking at my door? Make no sound, tiptoe across the floor. If he hears, he'll knock all day. I'll be trapped, and here I'll have to stay. I've done no harm, I keep to myself. There's nothing wrong with my state of mental health. I like it here with my childhood friend. Here they come, those feelings again. Come to take me away. Why do they follow me? It's not the future that I can see. It's just my fantasy.
chasing what gives in the snow. Pleasant faces on the window pane, but that's a long, long time ago. We got to a restaurant. You say it's love you want. I realize I can see it in your eyes. You're moving on to something more.
Someday. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. He was 6'4" and full of muscle. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down under. Read us low and mention her. Can you hear the thunder?
the lights go out. The streets are empty and there's nobody about.
You'll be all right in the morning time. Yeah, you're doing fine.
I see you on the nightline. No need for you to fight, boys. Hang up all your guns. Find your mask and as best as you can, get ready to run. Keep all the food lines moving. Don't come crying for more. The signs were there, you should have bought connections before.
We'll be alright in the morning time. Yeah, we're doing fine.
I'll see you on the nightline. Such a big joke. Make them feel the heat, but my head's unsteady, can't seem to keep my feet.
We'll be all right in the morning time. Yeah, we're doing fine.
I'll see you on the nightlight. Jump off the Eiffel Tower, just have a look around. Move fast in the tunnels of the underground. Move fast in the tunnels of the underground. Let's go.
another expression of mine. It don't mean nothing at all. It's defying, oh, crystallizing. You know, people just love to play with words. People just love to play, haven't you heard?
Johnny, don't you slip up or play the fool.
Oh, ma, oh, no, da, I'll be your golden boy. I will obey every golden rule. Get taught by the teacher not to daydream. Get taught by my mother.
Football with you, John? No? Oh. You must be gonna play cricket this year then, are you, John? Nah. Well, you sure are a funny kid, Johnny. But I like you. So tell me, what kind of boy are you, John?
I only like dreaming all the day long. Bigger, 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 bigger
out to you, my sweet young friend. You got money, perhaps you could lend. Wash my leather face in the afternoon sun. My shirt's torn, my time's near done. Touching the untouchables, but they don't know. Respect the disrespectables, but in the end, you know, you turn away. What can I say? Spend my nights in the telephone booth. I make sure I leave the phone off the hook. There are no Joneses and I pay no rent. I gotta stand straight cause my back's so bent.
Tell my secretary I ain't taking any calls.
And if you wanna find me, just ask the boys down up the road. That's where I'll be. Can you help me get up this fence? Can't you see I'm just an old man? Tried hard, did what I can. Touching the untouchables, but they don't know. Respect the disrespectables, but in the end, you know, you turn away. What can I say? You never, never know.
All right, we're going to kill the music 2 minutes early because the next song is like 4 minutes and then we'll run over. And yeah, this is what happens when I don't do curated playlists because I run out of time. Gosh, it is good to be back at the Academy tonight. Fashbird, how are you doing? Can you hear me okay? Can anyone hear me? Whoops. 2 minute walking. Okay. If you guys can hear me in the chat, give me a thumbs up. Give me a no slash. So, why does it keep doing that? Oh, okay. See a line through the mic. We hear you. I see a line through the mic. Huh. Well, I'm not muted. We cannot hear Fashbird. So let's see. All right. Changing some settings, it looks like. That's all right. I'll babble on for a little bit. I'm good at that. The mic logo. Okay. Hey, Unobtrusive. Good to see you. All right, Fash, as soon as we hear you, I will be like, oh my gosh, there's Fash. So, all right, let's say hi to our classes. We're going to stop calling them chats on Fash Academy. They're classrooms. And then over here on 88 Streams, we have Arian Eagle, Bear Waffen, Talmudic Scalper. It's like really tiny print. Sergeant Snackles with the official name change. All right, Fash is dropping out. I'm sure she's going to pop back in here in a moment. And we had Women in the Shoe pop in. I'm not sure, like, how much I can rely on that little header thingy. Call Froggy Friend quick. Okay, let's try this again. All right, we got Fash back. Do we have the vocals? Not yet. That's okay. All right. Come for the babble, stay for the class. Yeah, the babble, I admit, there's a certain charm to it. All right, so over here in FTJ on the Salty Bitch. That's right, we got the Salty Bitch and the Sassy Bitch now. So we've got Arian Eagle Duckweed, who also dropped a very generous donation. Thank you very much. Miss Hitler Fashbird, Toxic Straight White Male, Thomas E. Dwyer, Unobtrusive, Hitler's Revenge, and Riot Earth hanging out with us so far. So, all right. Not sure. Oh, we got some static there for a second, Fash. Oh, okay. It's like the tech is just getting more and more complicated, I feel like, and we all know who to blame for that. We all know who to blame for that. Alrighty. Still nothing. Where's woman? Come. Oh, Lord. Alrighty. I know Fash was having some power issues as well, I think. weather's a mess. I feel like weather's a mess everywhere right now. But, so yeah. Fash Academy episode 18, because we had to repeat Mouthhausen. So we didn't do 17-18, we did 17 and 17.2. So nothing yet. All right. But you hear nothing unobtrusive. Are you hearing nothing from Fash or nothing from me? Okay. So, all right. I was going to say, my settings should be good. Output, headphones, headset with microphone, internal microphone. Okay, yeah, everything. Yeah, everything should be good on my end. So, we'll get it figured out. We'll get there. I mean, I've changed operating systems like twice at this point, and we've had how many different troubleshooting issues? Yeah. I had switched to Linux Mint, and then that didn't like playing with my NVIDIA card. So if anyone's considering switching to Linux Mint and they have an NVIDIA card, you got to be careful what OS you put in, apparently. Some of them don't play well, especially with the slightly older NVIDIA cards, which mine was a little bit older. So I ended up on Pop OS, and so far, so good. So far, so good. We are back on the FTJ meeting function thingy tonight because there was weirdness going on with the new Stream Studio. Of course, half an hour that was before Stream was supposed to go live. So it's a little bit more stripped down. We don't have the banner on the bottom. Still nothing. Miss Hitler. Let me... Yeah, I have your volume set to the max. Mute. Ask to unmute. Okay. Is Kermie here? No, let me see if I can get a hold of him on Telegram. Let's see, can you get a hold of Schmerber? All right, I sent Froggy Friend, or Techie Frog, a message on Telegram, so hopefully he'll be able to get a hold of you. So... anyway, how is everybody doing tonight? Hopefully everybody's having a good day. I was saying something in 88 chat to Bearwaffen. I woke up on the right side of the dirt and I'm still white. So, you know, always a good way to start your day. It's yucky weather where I'm at in the hinterlands of Pennsylvania. It's trying to snow. Like, I keep looking out my window and I'm like, it's the middle of March. There shouldn't be snow. There should not be snow. So, all right. Well, let's see. What can we do? I know what we can do. Let me, which one was that? I think it was this one. I don't know if you guys like check out the links that Fashbird so kindly passes on and we put at the bottom of the streams. They're really cool. Like, if you haven't checked them out, you absolutely should check them out at some point. Here was one of them that she sent for this week. We'll put that up and we'll kind of read over that because we're in Auschwitz. So, myths and facts. Like, this was a cool one because it was, it kind of gave like real brief blurbs about the different claims. There's a lot of cool links. Like, I know, what else was there? I don't want to go too deep into them because we're going to get into the show here in just a bit. But these are great. These are, of course, any of the ones she shares from her Substack, Carl's Substack. This site has been really, really interesting to check out. Institute for Historical Review. Like, definitely encourage y'all to check that one out. A lot of really good information on there. Like, I like this site in particular. It just, I find it easy to read. It's like, I'm usually reading things like on the fly in between doing things either at work or home. So, it's nice to be able to kind of be able to read without having to skim, because when you're skimming stuff, you're just not really absorbing as much, but this is written in a very nice format. Ooh, we got sound.
Hello.
We got sound.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. We got this. Awesome. I knew we'd figure it out.
One of these days, I will be ready. Hard to test before we get on because I have no one to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, like right before we go on.
Well, I was going to say, if you want, we can just arrange to jump in before pre-show starts for a couple of minutes. So you can kind of test before
that'll
we go
be
live.
Good. And then I leave my computer completely alone until it's time.
All right, sounds good. I had, oh my gosh. That's why I stopped using OBS, because I kept clicking the wrong things. And if you click the wrong thing once, you got to like redo all your settings. And I feel like the Jews are just at it hardcore today because I was using Talk Studio through Streamlabs, right? And well, I thought I had already paid for the full year. And turns out, I guess it was still the 7-day free trial, and my bank declined the transaction when I went in to try and get it straightened out fast because it thought it was a fraudulent one.
That's kind of shady.
That is kind of shady. I mean, I was really glad that my bank was on top of it. I'd rather have them, you know, stop potential fraud before it happens, but at the same time,
true.
I'm like, oh my God. I mean, there's pros and cons to small credit unions. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh no, that's what I've used since I was what, like 17. I've been okay. At the same credit union since then.
I know. I'd always
they're nosy. If you go to take out certain amounts, they're like, well, what do you need it for? It's like, I'm not 90 buying Google gift cards for some Indian on the internet. You don't need to ask me what I'm doing with my money.
Sorry, one second. Froggy friend just got back to me.
Oh, I tried to call him.
Okay. Let me just. But yeah, it's, I mean, I've called him a couple of times recently too about like, oh my God, what is going on with my computer? Poor Kermie, he's going to get sick of us. But yeah, no, I had never used a credit union until we moved up to where we're at now. And, there's just this really small, it's like the only location of this place, obviously. And it just had like the coolest name. And I know that's a dumb reason to pick a bank, but I was like, I'm going to check them out. So I've been happy overall. But
yeah, I can't say I can't complain. They just merged with another bank. So that's been a little bit of a pain, but overall, I mean, as long as you're keeping my money where it's supposed to be and
right.
I'm not dealing with shit, then I'm happy. I'm easy to please, you know.
Yeah, just keep my money where it belongs. Don't like do shady deals on the market with it, and we're good. We're good. So, but hey, we made it to the end of the train ride tour. Yes. Of the death camps.
As much as it's been a lot of fun, happy to move on, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think this was good. I think it's good to wrap it now while everyone's still, like, enjoying it instead of just going, okay, here we go, another death camp. And we've got exciting ideas to go with for the next sort of sequence, so that's going to be fun, too.
Yes. But, and I look forward to it.
It's going to be a blast.
There's so much more to learn.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And, I mean, there's a lot of people out there covering the Holocaust, and I feel like more and more are starting to dig into it every day. So I'm like, okay, let's maybe shine some light on some other areas that need some attention as well.
Right.
So looks like we also just got joined by the Woodsman, Whitman, and First Fire 508 over on FTJ, and Shlomo 88 and John Wayne S over on 88. So, hey.
Awesome. White power.
We got it. We got two fantastic groups. It's awesome. So all about the lies about Auschwitz. What did I call this one? All the Lies of Auschwitz. Yeah, I got to try. Yes. And come up with a clever title. And I just feel like this one probably has a plethora of them.
Oh, there's plenty. As you know, it is the core of the Holocaust story. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for Auschwitz, they wouldn't have much.
Yeah.
It is one of the one of the so-called five death camps. Well, according to some people, there's six, but this is supposedly where they originally killed 4 million. We'll go through what the numbers have shown throughout the years. But today, if you walked up to the front door of the museum, it would say they killed 1.1 million, the majority of Jews, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
If we know anything, in Auschwitz, the prisoners were made up mostly of POWs with some Jews. Maybe right. Half of them were Jews. So, no, it's not a 1.1 mostly Jews. It's a couple hundred thousand, yeah. Mostly POWs.
Best we can do is 271K.
Yeah.
Hey, Klasha. Sorry, Klasha just jumped in.
Good to see you, sister. So this is this camp is located in Poland. It originally was a WW1 camp, a Polish army barracks. The land was marshy, with a ground water level of meters below ground. So for those, I had to look this up. So for those who don't understand, that means if you were to dig down to 30 centimeters or lower, you're going to hit water. Like at a beach, it's just going to fill up with water, from what I understand. And if you were to bury a dead body within that water, you run the chance of poisoning your drinking water.
Yeah. I put
so it's a very interesting choice for a supposed death camp where you couldn't bury any bodies.
Right. I grabbed that one from the Holocaust Encyclopedia link that you sent. There was a really good picture that showed the different camps. I popped that up on the screen for everyone.
Yes, thank you. Yes, so there were originally three main buildings. The first was operable in 1940. That was Auschwitz I. The second one was the death camp, Birkenau. The first one, it was a registration and offices, that kind of stuff. So they said the second one was Birkenau, which was a killing center. That one started to work in 1942. And then the third one, Auschwitz III, Monowitz, was more considered a sub-camp. And that was operating in 1942. The second was 1941. My apologies. And although they had about 40 sub-camps, it was a very busy camp, much like Mauthausen, because there were a lot of businesses, mm-hmm. who had got labor from this camp.
Right.
We'll see that about 35,000 prisoners worked for IG Farber. We had Simons. They had taken a lot of labor from the camp as well. We'll get to that. But so to get back to the water level, so with such a water level that isn't that deep, if you were to bury diseased bodies near this water, and it leached into your well. Water was always an issue in a lot of these camps, just trying to get clean water to everyone. So you were going to set yourself up for some poisoned wells, for some possible death.
Yeah. We all know they like poisoning wells.
Yes. Yes, they do. Like I said, it was initially made up of the three camps and then 40 sub-camps. It was liberated January 27th, 1945 by the Soviets, hence the Holocaust Remembrance Day, well, one of the many that we hear about. Initially, the camp was to take in the Soviet and Polish POWs, but there were also British POWs and some Jews in there. Initially, at Nuremberg, the Soviets claimed 4 million had been murdered there. The Auschwitz State Museum and Yad Vashem claimed it was 1 million. There was a historian, a Holocaust historian, Gerald Redlinger, who claims it was 700,000. In 1993, Jean-Claude Pressick claims there was 800,000. In 2002, author and editor Fischer Meyer claimed it was 500 to 510,000. But still today, the sign outside, which was changed, now says 1.1 million, mostly Jews.
Dang. Those numbers kind of seem a little all over the place.
They do. And in the camp itself, the supposed killing center, wasn't all that big. They claimed that throughout the life of the camp, so 1940 through 1944, that's all the camp. So that's not the killing center. That's the registration and all that. They claimed that 1.3 million Jews went through the camp, was sent out to different camps. The first prisoners arrived on May 20th, 1940. In the camp, Block 11 was used for, so they say it was used for punishment. It was initially the area for the improvised gas chamber. They say the first gassing was in 1941, which seems odd since the Wannsee Conference was not until the early 1942, in which they stated that was when they were going to start the mass extermination of Jews. So I don't think there were any gassings, supposedly any gassings before 1942, but they claim here that the first gassing was in 1941. They used this tool called the goat for torture. So what they would do was they would tie your feet to the bottom of this like table, but it was an incline, and you would lay across the table and your hands would be tied down, and they would whip you, give you lashes. I can't see the Germans doing this. To have all these people standing around watching it and no one's stopping it, no one's trying to untie them, it doesn't make much sense to me.
No. Pretty useless thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, lashing. So you're going to lash a person, you're going to get them all taken out of work, essentially, when you have companies paying decent money for this labor.
Right. Not the efficient choice.
And a couple of the big lies about this camp were that the Jews claimed that the Germans used an electrified conveyor belt to kill them. So they would just lay some Jews down on this conveyor belt and they would go around, and as they were laying on it, they would be electrified.
Oh my God.
I don't know if that's as efficient or more than the electrified floor. Can you imagine the space you would need to have like all these conveyor belts just going moving all around carrying Jews?
Like, they're gonna go to all the trouble, all the expense to set up this massive conveyor belt with electrical whatever to zap people. Like, no, come on.
Their resources were so limited during this war. Obviously, they would not have the money or the generators to provide the electricity for this.
Correct.
Another one was that the Germans were so evil but intelligent that they created a special bomb that could vaporize 20,000 prisoners at one time.
Why wouldn't they have used that in battle? That makes no sense.
No sense at all. And that, yeah, what would keep it from hurting anyone else other than right. the prisoners?
Yeah. Like,
the whole thing is just garbage.
You know, maybe they wore, like, lead-lined muumuus or something to protect them. I don't know. Jeez.
So, well, let's watch the first movie.
All right.
First video. So these videos give us a look at the daily lives of people in Auschwitz, a little tour of it. And I think it's just good for us to see what was, you know, what it looked like. And it wasn't some dungeon where they were mass killing people.
Let me get this set up. All right.
If you have arrived at this page, you have undoubtedly heard about Auschwitz and know what has been said about this concentration camp in the years of World War II. This presentation seeks to present only the physical properties of the camp, a virtual tour, if you will, to inform discussions about this important subject. In this way, we hope that all who see it will gain an appreciation of the hardships of everyday life there and the very human spirit that is evident in the scenes of daily life. The photos and documents in this presentation were, for the most part, obtained from so-called Holocaust memorial sites and from private collections. Most people came to Auschwitz by train with whatever belongings they could carry. They left behind their homes, lives, and other possessions, along with their communities and beloved friends and family. With respect to Jews, who are the main group discussed in reference to the concentration camps, while all Jews in Germany were given the opportunity to migrate to Palestine and other locations in the 1930s, with their money and all possessions, many chose not to leave. Not everyone then went to the camps. Some Jews enlisted in the German army, a few rising to the high officer ranks. Others continued their lives as usual in Germany and in other countries. Auschwitz was a huge operation, with more than one camp and many large buildings and major installations. The camp had an absorption building, presumably to process inmates on arrival, taking note of identifying information and physical characteristics. All inmates had to undergo showering after the arduous journey, head shaving to remove lice which caused typhus, and wear camp clothing. Inmates worked with camp guards and officers to welcome and process new inmates. As part of the camp's amenities, there was a facility that inmates could use for religious services and purposes. Here we also have a photo of the camp commandant's house. The familiar red-tiled roofs of the Auschwitz barracks are shown here. The camp was enlarged as its planned population grew. The black and white photo shows the new barracks under construction. Inside, each of the three levels had double or decker bunks for inmates in separate men's and women's barracks. Auschwitz had a massive central heating facility for camp buildings. The central heating plant was constructed in 1941. Like any large community or town, Auschwitz required massive systems for sewage treatment and water purification. Here you can see the extensive piping that was eventually put in place, along with canals, ponds, and other facilities to clean and transport water. Some of these systems match those in use today. Auschwitz had a working farm, seen here in part on the bottom right. It also had a series of greenhouses, allowing the cultivation of fresh produce throughout the cold winter months in Northern Europe. In the two left photos, a massive food storage facility is seen under construction in 1941. Inmates tended the farm, taking care of the crops they would later consume. They were also able to plant their own food, caring for those gardens themselves. In addition, the Auschwitz farm grew cock sagis, a relative of the dandelion plant, which contains latex. This was used instead of rubber to make tires and other war essentials, as rubber was scarce during the war. The women in the upper left corner picture are working the fields of cock sagis. An agronomist in the middle photo on the right is seen here visiting the farm facility, accompanied by Thies Christofferson, a farmer and German officer who worked on this program of cock sagis. It was a model program at Auschwitz that other camps wanted to emulate. Also shown are a pigsty on the farm in the lower left and the interior of one of the greenhouses. These photos appear to show farm storage facilities for grain and perhaps water. An inmate is shown plowing the fields, almost completely hidden behind the workhorses. The camp bakery was an important building, equipped with giant ovens. Bread was an important part of the camp diet to increase calorie intake in the face of little available protein. Inmates received a set amount of protein weekly, and soup was featured at most meals along with coffee. Inmates doing heavy labor and pregnant women were to receive bigger food rations. The multiple chimneys on the first photo designated a camp kitchen. This Holocaust source says that there were 12 kitchens in the camp. There must have been many dining rooms as well, and one is shown here. A photo from inside the women's barracks shows the casual nature of the interior. The camp complaints office is shown, where inmates could express concern about any matter directly to the camp commandant. There was also a court on site and a jail for anyone who severely transgressed camp policies. Horses were an important part of life at Auschwitz, powering farm implements and transporting officers and visitors throughout the facility. There were inscriptions above the entrances to the stables. This one had some lines from an old folk song, the Prussian Horseman's Song. Your sons, land in the east, at the border guard's last post stand, your hand on the pommel that every rider shall be. Your noble horses grew from the homeland up. Here we start to see more inmates at work, in this case apparently moving food in barrels on carts. Inmates interacted with the guards, and there were many female guards responsible for female inmates. Auschwitz was very much about work. The camps were surrounded by factories, and the inmates were put to work if they were of age and able. Here we see men in the ironworks, inmates returning from their workday, and a vehicle garage with tools laid out, presumably for repair work. Here is construction work on the Dow factory, 1941. Construction of the Krupp factory, also in 1941. There must have been several buildings in this complex of the Krupp factory, because each photo seems to show a completely different kind of building. The information on each photo was taken from official Holocaust Memorial websites. Here are workers doing assembly and electronics work at the Siemens Brobuck factory and the Siemens airplane factory. Inmates' labor was crucial to the war effort for Germany. With all its working age men off to war, the inmates clearly filled a gap in wartime production requirements. As you can see in the top right, the inmates are making rifles at the Krupp factory. There were 3,000 babies born at Auschwitz, and all lived to liberation. There were nursery and daycare facilities, with nurses caring for infants and children while their mothers were at work. While there are few photos of children at Auschwitz, the ones available show children robust and healthy, including at the end of the war, as shown in the photo on the right, which was taken at the camp's liberation. Auschwitz had extensive healthcare facilities. The hospital is shown on the bottom right, with an interior shot top left. Inmate care was divided by type of condition, with infectious diseases isolated and separate wards for various kinds of ailments and conditions. The bottom left photo shows some of the doctors meeting informally. The two other photos show a storage room for medical equipment and clinical treatment room. Auschwitz had a fully operational operating theater and an isolation room for infectious diseases. More of the camp doctors are shown here. For particularly difficult cases, experts were brought in. More medical facilities included a laboratory, an X-ray machine, and a dental office. Auschwitz nurses are also shown. Cleanliness was mandatory at Auschwitz to prevent outbreaks of deadly typhus. In the top left photo, inmates are shown wheeling racks of clothing out of disinfection chambers where Zyklon B and steam were used to kill any lice and their eggs on clothing and other camp materials. The huge laundry boilers on the top right used heat to destroy pathogens on sheets and towels and other materials. The sign on the wall of the bathroom bottom left says, "Dirtiness is the basis of every disease." Pretty blunt, but I guess it needed to be. As shown on the bottom right, Auschwitz had modern plumbing. Auschwitz had a grand theater equipped with a grand piano. Musical instruments were provided to inmates, along with other facilities and tools, to create enjoyable performances of dance, theater, and song. There were events for children as well, and one former inmate recalls painting a mural of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs for the children in the theater. There may have been up to 16 Auschwitz orchestras playing classical, jazz, blues, ragtime, and other types of popular music. Here, a band plays outdoors on a winter day, an orchestra practices outdoors, and an orchestra puts on a full performance on a Sunday, apparently for SS. Auschwitz had its share of famous people living there, including jazz musician Louis Bennett, a group called the Kugel Orchestra from Cuba, and the Ovitz family, a performing family of seven little people, all of whom survived the war. Another famous Auschwitz resident was French Jew Alfred Nakache, an Olympic swimmer. Whenever possible, he put on swimming displays in the Auschwitz pool. He wrote about his experiences at Auschwitz after the war. The Auschwitz pool was made available to inmates who were considered high performers. It featured a driving platform and racing blocks. Sports were featured at Auschwitz, along with other fitness activities. This fencing match appears to be a major affair with lots of spectators. The prisoners of war, housed in separate facilities on the camp's grounds, formed football or soccer teams. In the later years of the war, inmates playing soccer were often joined by the guards. It was said by some inmates that the guards were more relaxed in the final months of the war as it became clear Germany was losing. Because inmates were free to roam around the camp, there were romances and marriages. There were celebrations of major holidays as well. Here we see a Christmas tree by a camp building. Inmates wishing to maintain or expand their knowledge and intellectual skills had access to a library on the camp's grounds, as well as to Auschwitz University, to which local professors were invited and indeed came to lecture. The facility pictured here looks well used indeed. Inmates could receive up to two letters or postcards monthly. The first postcard they sent out, as shown here, listed the camp's rules. All correspondence had to be in German and clearly written. Letters were subject to a maximum length and could contain no inserts. However, Food packages could be received in any quantity and size at any time. As Auschwitz was an internment camp, prisoners were released at the end of their sentence. Here is shown a release card. And of course, when the war ended, everyone was free to leave. Inmates generally had to go to displaced persons camps until they could find a country and a home to go to.
Wasn't there, I don't remember if it was Dachau, but I remember there was one of the other stops we made where postcards or letters were also mentioned. So it seems like this was something that was kind of across the system as a whole. Like they were allowed to receive and send mail.
Oh, yes. There were multiple camps where you could receive boxes of food, especially from the Red Cross. You could receive packages of clothing, letters. That went on until it became too difficult to do because of the war.
Right. I imagine the mail overall was just, you know, drastically impeded at a certain point.
Oh, yeah, because once you lost the railroads, the transportation became a little tough.
Yeah. So, like, you can tell why they suppress so hard. Like, I feel like from when the time when we would have been in school, where they were still talking a little bit more about a lot of the claims around the Holocaust, I feel like they don't talk about them at all anymore. I think because too many people were just starting to go, wait, what?
Oh, especially when you have the world of info right in your back pocket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this camp was the first and only camp that I've read about that had tattoos. Mm. So every prisoner who was a worker was assigned a serial number. Usually it would just be sewn in on their uniform.
Right.
But in some cases they would receive a tattoo. So Soviet POWs would receive a tattoo on the left breast, the upper chest. And civilians would get a tattoo on their left forearm.
Okay.
It didn't last all that long. I think it just became too much. As the war went on, it just became too much.
Yeah.
And they were probably losing too many people that it just wasn't helping anyways. They did suffer a couple of typhus epidemics there.
Yeah, I know the tattoo thing was pushed mad hard for a long time. And how many people were, I knew somebody whose grandma had a tattoo. And I'm like, you know, looking back with what I know now, I'm like, oh, now we know whose granny was a Soviet.
Yeah. And just remember, if they were going to kill you, there would be no point in tattooing you.
Right.
So back to the actual camp. So Block 10 was used for experimenting. This is where Joseph Mengele comes in. Mind you, he's one of 50 physicians at Auschwitz alone.
Right.
So the possibility of so many people claiming to have seen him statistically is just, you can tell it's bullshit. When there's chances of of 50 doctors seeing you, it's bullshit that so many would see one doctor.
Yeah.
He was only there from 1943 to 44. So some of these experiments they performed, they supposedly tried to sterilize people using x-rays. They injected chemicals into uteruses to glue them shut.
Huh.
But they also had a midwife who helped birth 3,000 babies at the camp.
Well, obviously, why you would glue them?
Yeah, I mean, you could just remove them. I mean, yeah. If you truly wanted to sterilize it, you would just remove the uterus or cut the tubes. Why are you gonna inject super glue into them, thinking that it's just gonna shut down the uterus?
I mean, there's so many easier ways. If your goal is to stop babies from being born, there's much easier ways.
Put birth control in the water. Give them shots. Give them injections. You could do a lot.
Hell, enough pennyroyal tea will keep anyone from being able to carry a pregnancy. Like, Don't ask how I know that. It's one of those weird facts my brain latched onto.
Sure. They also did tests supposedly while they were working on a vaccine for spotted fever. And, of course, the old testing on twins.
Oh, God, that one.
Which Carl has informed me that there would never be a reason for them to need to do that because the German scientists were so far ahead in their medical education that they already knew about genetics. They knew about twins. They knew what caused them. There would be no point in trying to switch eye colors or sew them together or do any of that nonsense. They also liked to supposedly intentionally inflict wounds to test different treatments. Now, this, again, just makes sense to me because you're in a war. There's plenty of people getting wounded naturally in the day, you know, in the course of a day. So you could easily test different treatments on those people. They did some unnecessary surgeries so that they could dissect prisoners. No, that's all bullshit. But I'd like to get into Joseph Mengele a little bit because I know you hear about him as the angel of death, but there's so much more to him.
Oh my God, yes.
So he was born March 16th, 1911. He was initially a part of a different party, the German National People's Party, which eventually became absorbed into the SA in 1933.
Okay.
In 1938, he joined the actual NSDAP and the SS in June 1940.
Okay.
He was drafted into the Wehrmacht, and he volunteered to the medical service department of the Waffen-SS. At the end of 1940, he was assigned to the engineering battalion of Division Wicking as a medical officer. He did see fighting on the Eastern Front. He's a veteran. He was well-respected.
Okay.
He earned the Iron Cross first and second class. Now, that takes some balls and some strength to do.
Hell yeah.
He was then promoted to SS captain. On May 30th, 1943, he was assigned to Auschwitz. So anything you hear about him doing in Auschwitz before May 30th is complete bullshit. In 1944, November, he was then assigned to Birkenau, which was the supposed killing center.
Gotcha.
He became the chief camp physician at Birkenau. There were a lot of claims that he was a selector, as in people would get off the trains and he would see which ones looked like they could work and which ones wouldn't. They may have selected certain people, but where they take it to that those weren't selected, they were automatically gassed or killed. That was not true. We know of many cases of people, whole families who lived in camps who were not touched. As a matter of fact, a good chunk of the prisoners in Auschwitz were unable to work. About a third of them were unable to work.
Okay.
It was found, though, that he did act within the norms of science under National Socialism.
Well, the whole dissection thing, like every time Mengele comes up, I have to open my big yap and point out to people, like, have you ever heard of Burke and Hare? Like, back in the bad old days of, like, the 1800s in Edinburgh, where students in medical school had to have bodies to dissect, so these guys would literally go around and dig up dead bodies.
Yes, like, that's why they started the cages over... Isn't that why they started putting cages over the burials?
That's one of the reasons there was also that craze started in the 1800s with the vampire fiction and, you know, being terrified that vampires were real. It was kind of a mixed reason. But yeah, it's like there's some gruesome history in the field of medical study, and it starts way earlier back than Mengele. Like,
oh yeah, no, I remember I've seen some films about that in England, where they had a lot of body snatchers there.
Yes, it was really bad there.
All right, so let's move on to the gas chambers. So initially there was a temporary gas chamber set up in Auschwitz I, but then they moved to create a permanent one. And they, by the end of the war, they ended up with four fake shower room gas chambers that use Zyklon B. But the numbers don't work out as usual. They would claim that at one time they could gas 2,000 prisoners in the gas chamber. Well, a gas chamber, it would measure about 210 square meters. You couldn't fit that many people in that room. Second of all, they said that they would just toss in some Zyklon B. And then immediately after they died, the room would be cleared. It has been noted, though, that Zyklon is very sticky. It sticks to walls, to floors. And the only way to clear it out of a room is to naturally aerate it, which could take up to 24 hours.
Right. So there's no way they could have cycled them through fast enough.
Right. And this is proven because there are two documents held still to this day by Americans. Who are at Nuremberg, stating that Zyklon B would stick to surfaces and would take up to 24 hours of natural aeration to clear out a room. Also, the ones we see today, if you were to visit Auschwitz today, you would see a recreation of a fake gas chamber, as well as the holes in the ceilings of the gas chamber and the chimney. Because there's nothing like tampering with evidence in the biggest case of mass murder in all of history.
Uh-huh. No, the Jews, they can do what they want. They'll get away with it, you know.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah.
What we've come to realize now is, in reality, the gas chamber was just a mortuary. And it makes sense because even from someone from my point of view, so I'm not a chemistry person, mm-hmm. but we know the Zyklon B was flammable. Mm-hmm. They said that it shared the same building as the crematorium. There was no overly insulated rooms, and they were using wooden doors on the gas chamber. So if you happen to leak any of the Zyklon B into the crematorium room and it hit the flames, it'd be July 4th. Everything would just go up. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, and that's looking at it simplistically because I haven't figured out all the chemistry behind that, but it just doesn't make sense. It does make sense, though, if you know it's flammable and there's open flames in multiple ovens, that it's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
A couple of prisoners of note were Anne Frank, Edith Stein, and Eli Weasel.
I like
that. Yeah. So we remember Anne Frank, obviously, with the diary. She died from typhus at 14, I think it was. She had gone through a couple camps. We first heard about her at Westerbork, which we went through a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
She made it through this camp as well with her father and her sister. We know Edith Stein. She pretended to convert to be a Catholic, and she was made a saint by the Catholics, even though she was a Jew. She was still sent to the camps because converts were still sent to camps. You can convert all you want, but the Jew blood is still in you.
Yeah.
The Nuremberg laws don't take into account any fake conversions. And
right.
Then Eli Weasel, we know he wrote a couple of fake books. He's a well-known tall tale teller. It's interesting to note that 802 prisoners tried to escape from this camp. 144 actually made it. What's surprising is they didn't make a big deal of these people who escaped. And they also didn't really try to prevent it. Because if you notice around Auschwitz, it was just wrapped up with some barbed wire. Not even electrified barbed wire. It was just regular barbed wire around the perimeter. So this is some major death camp where 4 million people, according to the Soviets, died, but they left it just surrounded by barbed wire.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
At least we know with Mauthausen, they used electrified barbed wire. But yeah. Here, they just went with regular barbed wire.
Oh, my God.
We did see some of the amenities in that video. I'd like to just go through some more. Because yeah. You need to realize this sounds like a goddamn resort. I think I probably would have had fun in the summertime there.
Yeah.
So they had bathhouses, laundry facilities, an Olympic swimming pool, horse stables, a dentist, 19 gas chambers for delousing clothing, half dozen orchestras and bands, including a woman's orchestra, a religious building used for all religions, a cantina where you could buy beer and cigarettes, a court and internal jail. Weddings were performed. They had movie theater. They had a library with 40,000 books for you to peruse in your spare time. They had a daycare block for children, art studios, traveling theater performers, state-of-the-art kitchens with these 12 smokestacks, a greenhouse, a brothel, a post office, a hospital, not only with the ability to do x-rays, but an operation room as well.
Oh, geez.
A complaint office, which in a death camp. In a death camp. So I'm guessing that these Jews just weren't afraid and they were probably there bitching a lot. So if I really thought my life was in danger, I wouldn't step foot near a complaint office, but it seemed not to be the case.
See, now I'm just picturing some Karen-like Yenta going up, knocking on the counter. My gefilte fish was stale. Like, Jesus Christ.
Can you believe that? A complaint office, yes. And they also did have an International Red Cross office on site, which performed monthly checks of the camp so that Germany would stay within the Geneva Convention's requirements.
Right. Because they had signed the Geneva Conventions, unlike the Soviets.
Yes. The workers had Sunday off. And guess what? They could even have visitors.
Jeez.
I'm sorry. My dogs are going crazy.
Oh, you're fine.
So they did have a maternity ward with a midwife. She was a prisoner, but they took her on as a worker there. They had soccer teams. And during the evenings, they could choose from cultural activities, soccer, basketball, water polo.
God damn. Like not just a pool, but like water polo. Very, very muck, high mucky muck.
Yes. Or they helped breed rabbits. And let me see here. They also had their own currency. Now, I don't remember hearing about this at any of the other camps, but workers would receive currency that they could take and use, I guess, at the brothel as well as the canteen.
It was like its own little infrastructure, its own city, basically.
It was, yes, like its own city. So this wasn't some just you got in, you got gassed. And then they moved on. They were there for a while.
Yeah, this was set up for like full-time living.
Yes, there was 174 bunkers, each that could hold 744 prisoners. So this was built to last a while, to stay there. And they were expanding it as necessary. Let's talk about the crematoriums. So in 1942, there was said to be three ovens in Birkenau, which could burn 340 bodies combined in a day. Now, I did a little math, a little basic math, and that works out, you know, per oven that they would cremate 4.7 bodies per hour.
What?
So that would be 340 divided by the three ovens, so that's 113. So it's about almost five bodies per hour they could supposedly cremate. So crematorium 2 and 3 each could burn 1,440 daily. Crematorium 4 and 5 could burn 768 daily. Now, if you were to add this all up, that would be 4,416 bodies daily. But they lie and they claim that they could fit multiple bodies in the ovens at one time, which then brought that number up to 8,000 daily. There are pictures out there with measurements of these ovens. It would be nearly impossible to fit more than one body. We have to remember, at this camp, supposedly the gassings occurred when the prisoners entered the camp. You were either selected to work or to get gassed. These people weren't thin. They weren't starved. They weren't malnourished. They were just regular people who came out. So there would be no way you could fit more than one body into one of these ovens. And see, even if you could, though, if you had two bodies in an oven, it would take twice as long to burn. So they're not saving themselves any time by doing that. But they backtrack and they claim, well, between 1942 and 1944, the daily average was about 1,000 bodies a day.
I mean, modern crematoria can't do that. You know?
I'm sorry.
I'm
trying to get these dogs out of the room.
You're fine. Everybody in the chat is loving the bass doggo waffen in the background.
They hate niggers. And what they do is they, I have a chair by the windows, and they sit up on the back of the chair, and they watch people walk by.
Based.
And you can tell it's nigger by the way they're barking. Sometimes they get their tails wagging because they see another dog. But they see a nigger walking by, and it's like, oh boy.
Good fur babies. They're doing their job.
They do the same thing when we're in the car, too. If that nigger walks by the car, it's like, oh God. See here. So if we were to look at ovens today, the average oven could burn 6,000 bodies per year if run continuously, which is impossible.
Right.
From the bit I know about crematoriums is the longer they're used, the longer they're really hot, then more stones start to crack. Mm-hmm. Bricks start to crack, and it's not meant to forever run at 1500 degrees, you know?
Yeah. That's a common misconception I think a lot of people have, is like, oh, it's stone, it's impervious to fire. No, it's not. No, it is not. Even certain gemstones can melt in the heat of like a common house fire, like where a house burns down completely.
Right.
So yeah, there's no way they could run it continuously that like that with a regular stone structure and not have something go wrong.
Never mind that, but you also need fuel. They used coke, which is, I believe, a certain kind of coal, mm-hmm. which they had limited reserves of because they needed that to delouse the clothing.
Yeah.
So I mean, that at the numbers they were talking of millions being cremated because you couldn't bury any of them, it would be impossible. We have the bills mm-hmm. of all the Cyclone B bought, all the coke bought. We have all this stuff. So today, a crematorium can take up to 1 hour per 100 pounds of body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they went over that in, I forget which camp it was, where we watched the video with the pig, where they tried burning the pig.
Yes, Treblinka, they tried to say that you could cremate, open air cremate 2,000 bodies with just some wood underneath them. And he clearly showed that even if you burnt it for hours and you kept on replenishing the wood, it would not get rid of a majority of the pig. It just wouldn't work. And the bits that you have left over are a lot. Like, there's lots of big chunks of bone left. You have all the teeth left. There would be a lot left. And to do 2,000 bodies at once is just ridiculous. Yes, grease, the fat will help the fire, but laying bodies on top of each other isn't going to allow air in to grow the fire.
Right. It will self-smother.
Yeah. All right, so between 1943 to 1944, like I said, 35,000 prisoners worked at the IG Farber factory. Krupp and Simons also had factories close by that they used the prisoners. There were 28 subcamps near plants, coal mines, foundries, other metalwork factories, and chemical plants. And they also had farming camps. So for those who couldn't handle the rigor of a real factory, they could work growing the food for the camp.
Yeah.
Though they make up a lie here, they claim that Germans had mixed human ashes into the sod in the manure. Now, that would make no sense. There is no nutrients. There would be nothing gained from mixing that in there. But it did make me think, was it a couple of years ago, they were talking about, I think in California, of using humans as fertilizer. God. That you could have your loved one like cremated, but I think by water, or not cremated, but the body would be essentially turned into fertilizer.
Oh, God.
Like Soylent Green kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it ever took off. I personally would find that very disrespectful. Yeah. I understand cremation, and I understand wanting to be buried, but mm-hmm. to turn my family member into manure, it just doesn't make sense.
It must have been a Pajit that came up with that one.
Oh, I put money on that one.
Like, I thought the burial pods where it would sprout a tree and a tree would grow out of your corpse was weird enough. That's worse.
Yeah. I can understand wanting to be buried under a tree, the nice shade, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that one, there was a little bit of appeal to that one. Then I'm like, wait, is this how we get haunted forests?
Not sure. I didn't think about that, yeah.
I guess it depends on who's being buried under the tree.
True. Once the camp was liberated, it was used to intern POWs, German POWs. So we know that the Soviets never allowed America, France, or England into the camp to check it out for themselves. But immediately, once they liberated, they started putting Germans into it. The interned POWs said they never saw any evidence of mass murder in the camp. And it makes you wonder, so if Russia was sitting on this camp of the worst mass murder in the whole world, there should have been plenty of evidence. And you would think they would be very upfront, right at the very beginning, showing everything they had. But no, instead they just brought POWs in and went on about it until they started to rebuild the so-called gas chambers and the chimney and all that. Mm-hmm. Today you'll see, especially on Twitter, they like to pull out the old, there's scratch marks on the concrete and the gas chambers. Well, we can thank the Auschwitz Museum for proving this wrong. We know that you can't scratch concrete with your fingernails. It's not possible. You got to have the strongest nails around. It's not possible. But what we see today on the walls of the so-called gas chambers is actually essentially graffiti from people visiting the camps, using keys or whatever to make marks into the wall. And you see that in pictures because where it is happening is where people are able to reach to and is nowhere else in the gas chamber because it's tied off. So there's only a certain area a person could actually reach to, and that's where the scratch marks are. So when you see someone claiming that, oh, they scratched the wall, it was horrible, just go to the Twitter account for Auschwitz Museum, and they'll tell you right there, no, it's not what happened. Another incident we have from the camp is Anne Frank's stepsister. Okay. She had made the claim that the photos taken by the Soviets were faked. Because during liberation, for some reason, the Russians just forced to bring any cameras with them when they liberated the camp. So they had everyone come back for a fun time of taking pictures together after the fact. And I have heard some Jews try to say, well, you know, well, she ended up in a mental asylum afterwards, so you can't really believe what she said. And I'm claiming BS on that because yeah. I know they have a history of putting people in psych wards when they don't agree with them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big history of that.
There was a survivor named Rudolf Kaur who claims that he was drunk when he testified about Auschwitz. So he's not trustworthy. But in this case, we have three witnesses, three survivors who've all went on trial. They all went up as witnesses for the defense at the Nuremberg trial. Joseph Berg, he was the 12th witness called for the defense. He testified there were no gas chambers. Marika Frank Abrahams said she knew nothing about gas chambers. Well, she went up for the defense. And Dr. Kalski said he saw nothing like a gas chamber in any camp he ever saw, and he had spent 3 years in Auschwitz. The commandant, I'm sure many have heard about this, Commandant Haas was horribly tortured. We know that they liked the British would torture them and damage testicles and just do all kinds of horrible stuff to get a confession. And if you torture them enough, you can get any kind of confession you want.
Oh yeah. So you reach a certain point and you'll say anything just to make the pain stop. Like
yes. Commandant Haas, he admitted to some very silly things that, you know, say 10,000 and 10 million were really killed or this or that. It was outrageous claims because he knew that eventually people would see that it was all made up, that he was lying about the whole thing and that they based this trial on known lies. But he had written a letter on his way out. He had put a letter in his pocket, to which it was to his wife, and he had apologized for confessing to such things. But he had mentioned the torture that he endured. Unfortunately, though, the Americans took the letter, so she never got to read it. But I can imagine the confusion on her part or the sadness. I'm sure she knew that it was not true. I'm sure she probably visited the camp. I mean, they had the commandant had a house on the campgrounds, so I'm sure she knew it happened. And I think one very important thing we need to keep in mind with this camp was that the same Soviets who came up with all these fake tales, because it was only them who were allowed at Auschwitz and only them who wrote the supposed history at Nuremberg about this camp, they were also the people who tried to blame Germans for the Katyn massacre. Mm. The Katyn massacre, for those who don't know, it was a mass murder of about 20 or 22,000 Polish intelligentsia. The Germans came across mass graves in the forest, and they came out and got the press out there and said, we didn't do this. Someone killed all these people. Eventually in the 80s and 90s, Gorbachev came out on a news conference, and he admitted that Russia had killed all of them, because that's what communists do. They got to take out the higher-ups. And that's what I have written down.
Okay.
So I have a few more videos there, just to finish off this whole section. There's a video there about children at the different camps and that kind of thing. And I figured that we'd go through those. So it should be, I think, this second
Auschwitz,
one.
Auschwitz Work and Play?
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty sure I got them in the right order, but I'd like to double check. So dreadful.
It is horrible. Live performances, you know? It's just dreadful.
To have to sit through theater productions, oh my God. Jesus.
Unreal. Unreal. Oh. And they got cigarettes and beer at the canteen. So you tell me, I could sit down, watch a concert with a beer, smoke a couple cigs, and that was my Sunday.
Yep.
And that's horrible.
Yep. Oy vey. Oy vey.
So the next one is another overview of children throughout the different camps. Now, this is just because we're finishing up this.
Right.
This chapter of our journey. So I figured, let's just take a look at them.
Absolutely. Remember to unmute it this time. Oh, yeah, I got to hit play first.
What happened to the children in what has been called the Holocaust of World War II? While many stories have been told, what does the evidence of the period show? This presentation takes photos that have been available over the years from Holocaust memorial sites and private sources to present an overview of the experiences of children in the German-administered concentration camps, transit camps, and labor camps from late 1939 to early 1945. This presentation focuses exclusively on camps completely controlled by German forces, including the SS. Records maintained at the Auschwitz camp show that 3,000 babies were born there over the years. According to the records, all survived to the end of the war. Babies born at the camp are shown here in the nursery, under the care of a nurse. Nurses took care of newborns and babies while their mothers recuperated or worked. Few photos are available of babies and children at Auschwitz, and any that may exist are in the hands of Holocaust memorial sites or private individuals. It is not known why the Germans wouldn't have taken more photos of these facilities and standards of care. Perhaps more photos can be found in the archives. The nursing staff and nursery provided normal standards of care for the very young children at the camp. We can even see that the crib bars are narrowly spaced, which is a more modern standard to prevent children from getting their head caught between them. At Sered concentration camp in the Slovak Republic, mothers are seen with babies in carriages, out for a stroll and posing for the camera. All are well bundled up to deal with what must have been chilly weather at the time. The children's outdoor playground at Sered camp seems to include a large sandbox, where these children are very busy creating sand sculptures. Babies were born in all the camps, including Dachau. This is Jerry Legman, who was born in Dachau during the war. He is shown first in the smaller photo on the far right with his mother, just at liberation. In the larger photo, he is shown healthy and strong a couple of years later in the displaced persons camp, where he continued to live with his mother until they could secure a new home. Also at Dachau, we have photos of a child with his mother and babies with teenagers. The website displaying this photo says that it is mothers and babies. These moms look like teenagers. At Vine concentration camp in the Slovak Republic, babies are placed in the pool for a refreshing opportunity to splash and enjoy the water. We know from photographs that many camps had swimming pools. This is the exterior of the children's barracks at Theresienstadt camp in Czechoslovakia. These barracks may have been the camp's housing for orphans. Children whose parents were at a camp, were at the camp, were less likely housed with their families, as this camp was like a small town, combining a ghetto with a concentration camp into one large facility. These young children are taking a nap outdoors in the summer with a nurse in attendance. There are multiple photos of this scene, and this one is the clearest. Each child has his own bed with a pillow and light blanket. Again, in the children's barracks at Theresienstadt, here is the playroom. It is not known whether this space was also used for learning activities. It is well equipped and boasts a mural and sculpture by the artist Joe Speer, who lived in the camp during the war with his family. A close-up of the wall mural and sculpture in the children's playroom, as well as a close-up of children on riding horses, taken from what is termed a propaganda film created by the Germans about this camp. This is the only photo used in this presentation that is said to be taken from this film. Another view of the children's playroom, with teachers or caregivers sitting with groups of children. There are both stools and storage boxes for the children to sit on, much like those in use by parents and caregivers today, and work tables for projects are at the back of the room. Each child seems to have a toy to play with. The children's playroom is visible at the bottom of this stairway. We can surmise that all the youngest children in the camp had access to this room for the kindergarten and for playtime. The children seem very excited to climb these stairs and are lining up at the bottom for their chance to go up. The reason why is revealed in the next slide. The children had a slide leading into the playroom. We can see a caregiver making sure the children are well placed on what seems to be a simple sled the child is holding on to protect him from hurting his skin on the slide itself. We can also see the children lined up waiting for their turn, down the slide and up the stairs again for more. Not all photos and video images from the camps are labeled. We see here a scene from a video of gypsy children in a camp under the care of nuns. We believe this is Auschwitz. The other scenes show children from Ravensbrück and from Westerbork, where the writer Clara Pinkoff is sitting with a young child. It seems that families were kept together in some instances, including the Birnbaum family, pictured here in Westerbork, first indoors and then on the street where they lived in the camp. All members of the family are well-dressed, in their ordinary clothes. The artist Joe Speer was sent to a concentration camp for creating cartoons of Hitler in his job as a newspaper illustrator. He and his family were first sent to Westerbork and then to Theresienstadt, where they remained until war's end. Many of the illustrations shown in this presentation, including the wall mural shown earlier, were done by Joe Speer. Here we see a drawing of the artist by Max Plotchek. Here we see two sisters interned at Westerbork and a mother with her two daughters. Here are three boys in a residence in Theresienstadt. The interiors we see throughout the camps are comfortable. We also see other children in relaxed environments in the camp. A candid shot of children in Theresienstadt camp in 1944. In almost all cases, children in photos from the war are in normal clothing. In only one photo in this presentation are they seen wearing badges. Again at Westerbork, here is the Fink family, father Manfred, son Michael, and mother Herta. We see Michael dressed up for an outing. Sadly, Manfred was eventually sent to labor camps and perished before the end of the war. Herta and Michael remained together and survived the war. Here we see Michael Fink all dressed up for his first day at Westerbork School in 1941. He is holding a school cone, a German tradition of creating a large cone of treats and school supplies to help children become excited about their new learning adventure. We also see a crowd of school children and teachers between the barracks of the camp. Here is a class of very young school children at Westerbork with their teachers. Here is a class photo of older children at Westerbork in 1941 and a photo of a classroom in the camp school, complete with wall postings relevant to the rest lessons of the day. Note that this photo is very blurry because it is taken from a very small original. The original photo is less than half an inch wide and about 3/8 of an inch wide, as shown below right. Many photos in this presentation are from such small originals, which were common among photographs of the 1940s. This class of Westerbork teenagers is well-dressed for their photo and surrounded by flowers. These school children of Theresienstadt are shown wearing yellow star badges. Here is a class of the youngest children at Novaki in a kindergarten class. Two teachers are present and there's lots of artwork on the walls. The shelves are packed with items made by the children or of interest to them and topped with an abacus and some kind of tree mobile. The same type of wood paneling is seen on the walls of all the classrooms in the Novaki camp. Here is a photo of kindergartners in Novaki camp with their teachers and perhaps parents in a close and informal group. Note that the artwork on the walls is the same as in the previous photo, so it's probably the same classroom. Note as well the size of the original photo, bottom right. Here is the kindergarten building at Theresienstadt camp. Above the doorways and windows are drawings of wild animals, with the camels shown in close-up here. This rather grand double doorway seems to be the exit of a school at Theresienstadt, with students going outside to a park with a water fountain as the adults watch. Young children at Theresienstadt are shown here at desks. A child's homework assignment is also shown. A Novaki classroom for first graders is shown here with the children in groups and the teacher at the left. These older children at Novaki are doing an assignment while their teacher stands at the back of the room. Again, we see the wood paneling. Older Novaki students here may be taking a test as their teacher confers with another teacher or school official. Note the pot-bellied stove at the back of the classroom. Here, Novaki students are bundled up with their teacher and ready for some outdoor activity. All the children have warm coats, hats, gloves, and boots. Again, the tiny original photo is shown on the bottom right. In milder weather, here we see a full class or two of young children out for a walk with their teachers in the Slovak Republic. Again, all are well-dressed for the weather. This photo shows the Theresienstadt children taking a brisk walk in the park. Here in a photo from a Slovakian labor camp, we see a class of what are probably first graders all dressed up for their class photo and holding an image of something that is important to them. The walls of their classroom are completely covered in paper for drawings. More Slovakian children in school are playing in separate groups of boys and girls, as we can see the girls on their own in the lower right. The children have blocks and have made their own drawings, which the teacher has placed on the walls. Again, this rather stern photo seems traditional for the time, as the teacher in the Slovakian camp school uses a pointer to direct children's attention to each statement on the blackboard. Again, a rather stiff and formal class photo from a Slovakian camp school classroom. Back at Theresienstadt, it is nap time for the children, and each has a small pillow and light blanket as they spread out on wide benches outdoors on a summer day. One child waters the flowers. It may be nap time, but these children at Theresienstadt are enjoying their snack instead of sleeping. All the school children are well-dressed and well-groomed. A swing set in the Theresienstadt garden. Perhaps this is outside the children's barracks, but it is surely accessible to all the youngest children. This photo of children playing in the park shows another swing set near the fence, center right. The Theresienstadt gardens were made available to the kindergarten children, as we see here, as nurses accompany the children and have stools, rocking horses, and a bicycle for them to use. In another area of the park, older children have taken the younger tykes on their laps for a turn on the merry-go-round. Nurses can be seen in the background, making sure the children are safe at recess. The park in Theresienstadt included teeter-totters as well as a merry-go-round. In the bottom photo, we see mothers watching their children play. Theresienstadt had a huge sandbox for the children, and a large group is assembled around it here, while children young and older are seen playing in the sand. Children had opportunities for unstructured play and even some roughhousing in the camps. Here we see boys from a Slovak camp play wrestling. In those days, this was considered normal fun, and we can see that the children seem to be enjoying themselves. At Sarad camp, we see older girls dancing the hora around a group of boys in the center of their circle. This photo was taken outside their camp school. More dancing of the hora at Slovakian camps, with several groups dancing. The hora was danced at Westerbork camp in Holland, too, with both older girls and older boys participating. Here, a large group of Slovakian children dance the hora at recess. A group of Slovakian schoolchildren plays leapfrog as they go for an energetic walk outdoors. A couple of schoolchildren is shown sharing a bicycle outside of Camp Barracks at Westerbork in 1942, while a young child rides a rocking horse outside at the Theresienstadt camp. Note the small size of the original bicycle photo. Calisthenics were practiced at the Slovakian camps and ball games were played. We can imagine that these more organized activities took place during regular fitness classes during the school day rather than at recess. More calisthenics and a foot race for the girls at a Slovakian camp. Acrobatics also seemed to be on the fitness agenda at the Slovak camps as a boy shows his skill on a very high balance beam. Another group is exercising. A group of young women goes for a run at the Theresienstadt camp. This boy's sports team is in uniform, but the sport is not specified. They are shown with their coach. Again, a blurry photo from a very small original. The Novaki Jewish youth soccer team poses with their coach on the soccer field, with the goalposts behind them. This drawing by Joe Speer shows the soccer field in the courtyard of the barracks building at Theresienstadt, with soccer players in the midst of a game and crowds of residents watching. We can speculate that the children of the concentration camps, work camps, and transit camps also had access to the swimming pools. Here we see adults swimming in the Novaki swimming pool in 1942, top left. We know that the Olympic swimmer Alfred Nakash spoke of his swimming displays for inmates in the Auschwitz pool, shown here. That pool was said to have been made available to inmates with good records. Here we also see the Bergen-Belsen pool, which was near a camp kitchen. It's shown at Liberation. And from the Theresienstadt pool, which must have been beautiful when it was new. Many camps not mentioned in this presentation also had pools for which photos are available, including Ebensee Camp, Mauthausen, Treblinka, and Esterwegen. There may be more. More swimming pools at the camps mentioned in this presentation, including the Ravensbrook Pool. In addition to the color photo, we see a photo of men in front of the diving board. In archives, this is said to be a photo from Auschwitz, but the types of buildings seen in the background suggest it is Ravensbrück. While Ravensbrück was a women's camp, there was also a small men's camp on the site. The other pool is at Vine Camp, as shown previously. It is confirmed in the photo archives that this is a swimming pool. Older youths mingled with adults and younger children in the camps. Here we see a photo from a family at the Vine Camp. These youths are outside a dormitory in the Nitra camp in Slovakia, 1941. Children young and older pose for a proud group portrait at the Novaki camp. Children and young adults joined with their parents and spiritual leaders for a ceremony lighting the Hanukkah candles in Westerbork camp. Also at Westerbork, a Hanukkah celebration. This man seems to be urging the children to participate, perhaps in a rehearsed psalm. The Hanukkah drawing is from a child at Theresienstadt. Music, arts, and theater were very much a part of life in the camps for the children. Here, Theresienstadt children in their playroom are entertained by an accordionist. At Westerbork, children and a dad are treated to the music of the musician Benny Bear. At Novaki, a large children's choir performs in 1940 on the grand stage of the Novaki Theater. The choir master is shown at center. At Westerbork, an audience of children is assembled for some entertainment. This must be a room specifically for the children, as there is a large mural on the back wall. The mural is enlarged above. The children's opera Brundabar was composed by Hans Krause while at Theresienstadt in 1938. It was performed by the children of the camp during the war in the production depicted here and in the following scenes. We see two posters for the production and a line drawing of Hans Krause by the artist Max Patrick. The cast of Brundabar, the children's opera, was performed 55 times in the camp. Here we see some audience members for the Brundabar performance and have a sense of the grand stage and theater in which it was performed. The actors at the Theresienstadt production are shown top right. Mickey Mouse was as popular in the camps as he was outside. Here the children of Novaki camp dress up as mice and perform for their friends and families. The teachers are enthusiastic supporters. This grand set and these costumes were for a children's play at a Slovakian camp during the war. Here are more scenes from the elaborate play in a Slovakian camp administered by the Germans. Back at Novaki camp, very young children are part of a grand presentation with lovely costumes and music from young musicians. Here we have the two stars of the show, Ivanka Kohora and Ula Šajčez, dressed in costume. The cast falls into a slumber in this scene while the children's orchestra plays away. Very young children in the Slovakian camp perform for their classmates and friends. I'm guessing mushrooms and ladybugs. The sailors salute. It was not until 1947 that it was decided that Tel Aviv would be part of the proposed Jewish state in what was then called the Palestinian Mandate, an area controlled by the British. Here, in 1943, we see teenage girls at Novaki camp celebrating in a small way the city that already housed hundreds of thousands of Jews at that time. Note the small Stars of David on their belts. Younger teenage girls at Novaki perform a dance on stage. The children's barracks at Theresienstadt included a puppet theater, as shown in this drawing by Joe Speer. Joe Speer also drew a garden that was tended by the children of the camp. While not explained, this photo appears to show a dining room for children and families. It is one of the few times men and women appear in photos together with children. Camps had family accommodations as well as bachelor's barracks for men and for women. Here we see a modern recreation of a family barracks at Westerbork camp. In Sered camp, families were assigned to specific barracks buildings where family rooms and sleeping quarters were made available for each family. Here we see the barracks buildings and a sleeping arrangement for one family. Here is a family room for one of the families in the Sered camp family barracks. While it is not specified whether this was a room for a family or one person, it has been personalized by its occupant or occupants. An inmate drew this representation of living quarters in Theresienstadt. While it is hard to make out, There appears to be two levels of bunks, some shelving, and some other furniture under an ornate ceiling. On the right, a family poses in the window of their accommodation at Westerbork Camp. Another inmate drawing from Theresienstadt, this time showing a woman cooking in a kitchen by herself. This does not seem to be a large kitchen suitable for cooking for large groups. It is possible that smaller kitchens were made available for families. Since it was also a ghetto, this may simply be a kitchen in a rather normal apartment. Children's art from Theresienstadt shows the town's church spire and what is perhaps the lightning bolt of love hitting a young couple in the camp. These are from 1943. Part of the work done by adults at Sarad Camp was making toys. Here we see some of the toys they made. We can imagine some were made available to the children of the camp. A scooter made in Sarad Camp and a young boy enjoying it. Also some toys showing cartoon kids on wheels. Very little is available to show what resources were available to children in other camps. Here a drawing by a child at Sachsenhausen Camp is a thank you note to Vanny. Perhaps Vanny had something to do with a celebration as the children are shown gathered for a meal. The caption says, "To Vanny from the French kids, thank you." Older children learned some useful skills at the camp. The photo on the left is said to be child labor, with young ladies knitting. On the right, a young boy is said to be working in a carpentry workshop. Children had an important job to do in fire safety and were included in this drill at Novaki Camp, presumably to help lead their friends to safety in the event of a fire affecting the school. In Nitra, Slovakia, girls are working in a vineyard. On the right, Westerbork girls are learning to sew. The following photographs all show children at the times the various camps were liberated. All show the children healthy and well-fed. Here we see baby Gyuri with his mother, along with four other mothers with their newborn babies at Dachau. Strangely, most of the photos of concentration camp children at liberation show them in the striped outfits sometimes worn by adult prisoners. None of the photos taken during the war and discovered in the course of researching this presentation shows children in these types of clothes. Here we see some of the children of Dachau, happy to soon be free. Moms and newborn babies at Ravensbrück. Children from an unidentified camp are also shown wearing striped uniforms. The children at Bergen-Belsen are shown strong, smiling, and in good health at the end of the war, all apparently well-fed. More children of Bergen-Belsen. Auschwitz children leaving a camp building in normal clothes, and then later, other children are shown posing for a photo wearing adult clothing, ill-fitting adult clothing. More Auschwitz children in adult uniforms and liberation photos. Again, Auschwitz children wearing adult clothes. In the top photo, these Buchenwald children are wearing clothes made from German uniforms. The bottom photo is from June 1945 and shows children from the camp outside the barracks. Buchenwald children and adults leaving through the front gate of the concentration camp. Buchenwald children getting on a train and arriving at a children's home in 1945. I have questions for the Holocaust Memorial Sites and Archive holders. Where are the photos of everyday life in the big camps? The camps where terrible stories are told. Where are the photos of children in those camps during the war years? Why do we see children leaving the camps, but no photos of their schools, caregivers, everyday lives over a period of up to 6 years? Why are there so many photos taken by the Allies showing the suffering of the people in the camps who starved at the end of the war, as all of Germany starved under Allied bombardments, firebombing of all cities, and destruction of the road and rail lines, ending food deliveries? Why the focus on all the terrible deaths from typhus at the end of the war? Why do we not have complete records of life in the camps during the war years? I would like to see this. If the records have not been destroyed, because they surely existed, I would like to see them. We close this presentation with joyous Buchenwald children and youths waving goodbye to the camp that had been their life during the years of a war that killed 60 million, mostly Christian soldiers from Europe, Asia, and America, as these children go forward to a full life of freedom.
Oy vey.
It didn't look torturous to me. It looked like Germany tried to keep them as safe as possible during a war. And in some cases, they were even safer than German civilians.
Safer, better clothed, more well-fed, probably better medical care.
Right.
Yeah.
And they have the nerve to still to bitch about it.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. They're the eternal victims.
Not for much longer.
No. Funny thing about karma, catches everybody eventually.
Yes.
So, alrighty. Did we want to keep going tonight, or do we want to kind of finish this up next week?
You can just finish it up next week.
Okay. Yeah, that last clip, the guys in FTJ chat were saying how this pretty much covers the whole hoax with picture documentation proving the lies.
Right.
You know, it's a good one.
So I thought it was important to show people. It's like their lives were pretty good considering they were in the middle of a freaking world war.
Yeah. I had a thought about the one picture she showed, and then, like, she showed more pictures, and I got distracted, and it went pfft. So I'll have to rewatch it and write down notes for next week.
All right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, all the links, I know someone asked about links earlier. I posted all of them except for the Google Drive ones below the video. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to share those or not, so.
Yeah, I put them into the FTJ chat.
Okay.
I'll put them into the 88 one too.
Okay, cool. So yeah, there we have it. Auschwitz part one. We're going to wrap up with that next week. And go from there. We'll have fun times planning out the next series of adventures, I'm sure.
It will be fun.
We like to make it. Learning should be fun. Learning exactly. Should be fun. Aw, thanks, Kermie. So let's say so long and thanks for all the fish to our classrooms here over here on 88. We had Arian Eagle, although he had to, I think, leave the room for eaglet duty. Sniper's Ghost, Bear Waffen, Klasha, Fashbird, Ivor's Wrath, Julia's School of Fish, Kermy, non-kosher. Well, I'm non-kosher, so I do that every time. Shlomo 88, Sergeant Snackles, and Tango Alpha Vector. I know Bear Waffen's in here. And did I miss anybody? Ivor's Wrath was in with us. I think Sergeant Snackles, of course. How could I forget the sergeant? Although I think he left. I think he got bored and wandered off, so detention for him. Bad Snackles. I'm taking back your gold Swazi sticker. And then, of course, over here on 88. Oh, my gosh. I almost have to scroll this one. Arian Eagle, Duckweed, Hitler's Revenge, Klasha, The Woodsman, Unobtrusive, Uncle Stevel, Toxic Straight White Male. He gets the extra large gold Swazi sticker. He was the first in class today. Julius School of Fish, First Fire 508, Thomas E. Dwyer, Kermie, Riot Earth, Miss Hitler, VSOF, Vocational Science of Freedom. Check out his stuff if you haven't already. Whitman. It's jumping around. Who did I miss? I feel like I missed somebody. I think I got everybody. And then, of course, special extra thank you to Duckweed, Thomas E. Dwyer, and Kermie for their generous donations. You guys are awesome. So, go back to that. Scroll back to the bottom. Maybe, oh, it's already at the bottom. Nice. All right, children. This has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed this series. One of these, now that I'm finally getting my computer operating system straightened out, I promise I will get all of these Fash Academy episodes edited and uploaded on my BitChute. So if anybody wants to rewatch, they can rewatch there. They can rewatch here on FTJ. Check out all of Fashbird's myriad places she posts things. Her links are all down below the video as well. And yeah. Go forth, watch more streamers, watch cool documentaries. That's always a good one. Like if you just want to watch something and you don't really feel like chatting, go watch a documentary.
There you go.
Read a book, buy books, banned by Amazon. Great site. So you guys have been fantastic. Oh, yeah, I got to pick some music. I know exactly what song I'm going to pick, too. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I don't have that saved as a link. I don't quite have all my save sites back into back into my toolbar yet. It's a work in progress. So, can't remember the name of the band, but remember the name of the song. Midnight Oil, that's who it was.
Oh, that's a good one.
Out where the river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak, holding wrecks and boiling diesels, steaming bodies, 5 degrees.
The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share. The time has come.
We got